Hi, everyone. Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner. Today, I'm joined by fellow evangelist Mustafa Kassab.
Hello.
Hi, Mustafa. And today, our special guest is Torsten Graves. Torsten, would you like to introduce yourself and tell people what you're here to talk about?
My name is Torsten Graves, and I'm one of the program managers on the Azure SQL Database team.
Great. And what's your topic today?
We're going to talk about scalable apps in Azure and how to build applications against scalable data tiers.
Fantastic. Before we dive into that topic, we're going to cover a little bit of news. So the first thing is that we just released a preview of our Azure PowerShell 1.0. And I'd say one of the big changes to this, outside of a lot of improvements under the covers, is that previously, or up until now, whenever you wanted to switch between using the Azure Resource Manager and Azure SM, the Service Manager, you actually had to do run a command to switch modes. So we're doing away with that, and instead we're basically creating similar commands appended with RM at the end. So instead of having to switch now, you just call a separate command, and this will just kind of make things a little bit easier to do and understand without having to switch around. So there's a blog post here that explains how to use the preview, and it also mentions that we'll be talking more about kind of why we're making these changes and the purposes. So the next thing is an event that happened earlier this week. The Azure App Service team, which includes web apps, mobile apps, API apps, logic apps, a bunch of other stuff, they didn't ask me anything on Reddit. So unfortunately, obviously, this is in the past, so you can't really go and ask more questions. There's a lot of really great question and answer stuff in here that you can take a look at and kind of read about more about App Service. So the next thing is we've added some new capabilities for Azure Site Recovery with Azure Pack Update. One of the big things here was the ask for single Azure Pack instance managing both primary and recovery data centers. So that's now going to be an ability. So if you're using Azure Pack, some really great stuff there. Something we actually kind of showed last week when Hashi was doing, when Hashi did his demo covering Azure Resource Manager tips and tricks, is that the Azure CLI, so the XSplit CLI that works on Mac and Linux as well as Windows if you want to run it there, it's now two-factor authentication capable. So I'll link back to the show last week when Hashi did it, but essentially now if you are logging into an account that requires two-factor auth, the CLI will basically say, hey, you need to go to this URL, and then when you open that in the browser, it'll ask for a code, which the CLI gives you. Once you enter that code, you basically have two-factor auth yourself. So now you can use that with the CrossPath CLI. And then the last bit is actually kind of touching on some stuff we'll talk about today in a way, because it has to do with SQL Database. Essentially, we've added some new encryption capabilities, or we've GA'd some of these encryption capabilities. So always encryption will be in public preview by the end of the month. Transparent data encryption will be generally available by the end of the month. A few other things, such as being able to use Azure Active Directory for SQL database access. So if you're familiar with doing just SQL access where you have a username and a password, now you're able to do it with actual Azure Active Directory accounts. Row-level security is now generally available. Dynamic data masking will be GA by the end of the month. And then threat detection will also be in preview by the end of the month. So some really great security features coming down the pipeline or already in place for SQL database. So, one other piece of news, actually, is there's a new show on Channel 9 that you should check out. It's called Gals, and it all has to do about women in technology, and it's actually hosted by three of the people that work right here at Channel 9. So they just filmed their first episode, so give it a watch. So I think we're going to go ahead and switch over to our main presentation.
Cool. So thank you. And what I put together for today is basically a set of demos that show how you can build scalable, elastic data tiers and applications with Azure SQL Database. And where I want to start is basically how do those applications typically look like? And if you look at this, basically you have requests coming in, for instance, through Azure Traffic Manager, and then they either hit your Azure Web App or an Azure Cloud Service. And that's where the business logic runs.
Right.
And then in your data tier, you're typically running several databases in Azure SQL DB. Mm-hmm. And if you follow that kind of three-tier approach, you can scale all of the different layers. For instance, if you look at the web app or your cloud service, you can make that auto-scale, and it will grow and shrink its capacity as needed. If you think about the data tier, the way that you should think about scaling this is essentially by adding additional databases to your data tier.
So this isn't just scale it as in make it a bigger database or put it on a more powerful VM. It's actually actually different than that.
You can do that as well, but that only gets you that far.
Right.
And up to a certain point, you can obviously scale up your database. But essentially, at some point, you're getting into the premium tier. You have to pay for the premium features. So
right.
it can get very pricey. Also, if you have a multi-tenant application, you might also want to put different tenants into different databases to have them isolated from each other.
That makes sense.
Just using Azure SQL DB gives you a great way to do that because it's elastic, and within a couple of seconds, you typically have a new database stood up for you, and
okay.
you can simply add it into your data tier.
Okay.
Now, one of the questions that you then run into is, how do you keep track of all of these databases that you have in the data tier?
Sure.
And how do you route requests that come in from the business logic to the right database where the data for a particular tenant is stored? So in order to keep track of this, you typically use something like a catalog database that holds the metadata for your data tier and knows about how you've distributed the data, for instance, how you have mapped tenants to the different databases in your data tier. And you see this here in this diagram as the catalog database.
And that basically is, like you said, you know, your web app would have to go to that first and figure out then what database to actually talk to.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about ways how we can simplify that so that you don't have to basically invent the schema for the catalog database yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the connection brokering, you don't need to do that yourself.
Okay.
All of that is stuff that we cover through libraries in .NET that help you building these kinds of applications, and the demos will show how you can use that library.
Great.
So the first part that I want to show is how you can actually put your databases for that data tier into a group of databases that we call pools, which is an overall allocation of capacity. And as you add new databases into that pool, into that group, they basically draw resources from that allocation of capacity that you've put into the pool.
Okay.
And what's great about that is, particularly if you have unpredicted spikes in demand for resources, for instance, some of the tenants are suddenly getting busy in their database, you don't have to worry about that because the individual databases can basically fluctuate in their capacity needs. And for instance, if you put all of the databases into a standard pool, they can stretch across the whole standard performance tier. So dynamically go from an S0, which this is the smallest form factor in our standard tier, all the way to the most powerful S3 form factor in our standard tier. So let me show you that in the pool. Go into the Azure portal and show you the first bits and pieces of the demo app that we're going to explore in the next couple of minutes. So here I'm basically on my homepage, if you want, in the Azure portal.
Mm-hmm.
I've put together a blogs demo application, which is very simplistic. Stolen a lot of code from the Code First Entity Framework tutorials, which are about blogs. So here I have a server in Azure SQL DB. And you can see that I have a number of databases in here. And you can see I have about 10 different blogs databases. And here is the catalog database that keeps track of all the guys.
And all the instances of other databases should be the same tier in the pool.
So for a pool, you have to decide whether you want to make it a basic pool,
yeah.
a standard, or a premium pool. Those are the three options that you have.
Okay.
But if you remember standalone databases, you typically have a handful of different form factors for each of those. So kind of the whole thinking about which individual form factor should I pick, that is taken out of the picture from through the pools.
Okay.
So those are the individual databases, and you can imagine that basically my first tenant goes into blog one, my second tenant goes into the blog two database, and so on. So that's the server with the individual databases. Let me show you the pool as well. So here is my Elastic pool. And if you scroll down, you see here are the 10 databases that I have put into the pool. And it's all the different block databases that we just talked about. And let me also show you, I was mentioning that you can configure the capacity for the pool. And here, for the existing pool, I'm basically in the experience. It allows me to adjust the capacity. And it's the same if you create a new pool from scratch. It walks you through pretty much the same dialogues. So the first part is, what's the overall database capacity that I want to allocate and reserve for the overall pool, and I can pick from different scale factors essentially there.
And those DTUs, is a similar concept as what the DTU is for a non-elastic database?
Totally, yeah. It's very similar. The main difference really is that you're not bound to that specific form factor, but the EDTU is the one that allows you to basically fluctuate across the whole standard tier. Here, it's a basic pool. And basic goes up to 5 DTUs maximum. I can pick boundaries here, which basically tell the system what's the maximum capacity I'd allow individual databases to spike up to.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I can reserve a minimum amount of capacity for each and every database. And that basically makes sure that no single database is starving other databases.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So those are the two settings that you see down here. They're pretty simple for basic pools. You have a somewhat more choices if you're looking at a standard or a premium pool around the capacity there. Good. So that's the pool, and what it really helps me with is I don't need to think about capacity management for the individual databases and individual tenants.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I think about this is capacity for my whole data tier, and if I need to change anything, I just go into the configure pools experience that we just looked at, and I can adjust capacity at a global level.
Now, so in this situation, you know, you had, I think, maybe like 10 databases in there. Is there a point where you might have to go beyond having one SQL server running then? You have to have another SQL server with more Elastic databases, or?
You can obviously do that. So remember that in Azure SQL Database, the server is a logical concept.
Right.
So you can create many, many databases in a single logical server, and that server is not bound by the physical hardware, so it can stretch across
multiple
machines.
So you never need to worry about that. You just change the DTUs or change the tier you're using.
Ideally, yes. There are some limits around how many databases you can actually put into a single pool. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're in the hundreds. We're working on increasing those numbers into the thousands.
Okay.
But there are other very valid reasons why you might want to have multiple pools. So for instance, one might be you have different tiers of tenants or customers of yours in your application, and you might want to put your best customers or highest paying customers into a premium pool to give them the best capacity and the best experience, while you have your free tier customers in a basic or a standard pool.
That makes sense.
So those are some of the reasons why you might end up with multiple pools. Okay, so that was what's running behind the scenes in Azure SQL Database. Now, let's move on to the next aspect. So coming back to this architecture picture, the first question I want to touch on is a request comes in from one of the tenants. Let's say that tenant wants to create a new blog or a new blog entry. How do I find out which database that tenant is stored on? Mm-hmm. So what you would typically do is go into that catalog database that we talked about, figure out, oh, this tenant is mapped to database foo, and then open a connection to database foo, like you see here. So that's a simple case where you know, okay, a request or a transaction is coming in for a given tenant, and then you can use the catalog to find the right place for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just show in a minute how you would do that using our libraries. Now, the next question then that you may ask is, there are some requests that actually I want to run across tenants, for instance, reporting queries, where I want to see what are all the different blocks that basically have been put out there by all my tenants in my application.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a scenario where you want to query over many databases.
Right.
And how would you do that from your application? Mm-hmm. So we're also going to have a look at that.
OK, great.
So with that, let's jump into Visual Studio here. And just to orient you a little bit, so you see the SQL Server Object Explorer over on the left-hand side, and I'm logged into the blogs demo server that we just saw in the portal with the different blogs databases that you see here. I've also opened up the first blogs database, and you can see, just ignore the tables in the beginning here, but you see a blogs table, posts table, and the users table, very much in line with what the Entity Framework tutorial also does.
Right.
And then I've put together, and let's start with Entity Framework since we're talking about this. I've put together a little application that uses Entity Framework and the library that I was mentioning that helps you with managing your data tier and brokering the connections into the right databases. So that library I'm referencing here, let me increase this a little bit, is this guy, is the Elasticscale client. And it includes a couple of capabilities. The first one is what we call shard map management, which allows you to define a set of databases mm-hmm. that participate in your data tier. Mm-hmm. And it also yeah. allows you to manage the mappings of the different tenants to the different databases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then once you have defined the mappings, you can use APIs to broker connections into the right databases.
Okay.
So when I'm using this here, in this little application, let me get some more real estate here. And there's really not that much to the actual program. So here's where the program starts. Just gathering a couple of config parameters from app.config, building a connection string. And then the first thing that the program does is using the library that I just mentioned to get an abstraction of my data tier in my application. And mm-hmm. that's the data tier variable that you see here. And then the program just iterates through a loop where the first aspect is basically retrieving all of the blocks across all of the databases, and how this is done mm-hmm. we'll talk about in just a second. And then down here, the second part of the loop is basically where it asks me, hey, give me a tenant ID so they can log into the right database. Mm-hmm. And then for that database, let's add a block into this. And here's the piece of code that acquires the entity framework database context. Mm-hmm. And there are some changes to it that we'll talk about, how the entity framework database context actually uses the library behind the scenes to do mm-hmm. the connection brokering using that data tier abstraction.
Okay, so question for you, and stop you if you're going to get to this in more detail. But so up at the top you had where you're pulling out the settings from the app, mm-hmm. the config file. Mm-hmm. Are you pulling out the settings for the catalog database there, or a specific database, or do you have some like overarching permission like connection string for all of it?
So that's a great question. So what I'm pulling out essentially is the connection string to the catalog.
Right.
And all of the other connection strings to the individual databases, mm-hmm. They're managed by the data tier. They're in the catalog, mm-hmm. so they're not part of your app.config. Because
gotcha.
You don't want to change your app.config every time you
right.
Add a yeah. new tenant or add a new database mm-hmm. into your data tier.
Okay, and you get this connection string from the management portal, from the Azure.
Yes, yeah. that's where okay. you would get the connection string for okay. your catalog database.
Okay.
So let's run this, and it's just a simple console application. Here is the place where we're building that abstraction over the data tier, and you can see it goes against the blogs demo server that we just looked at,
mm-hmm.
and it takes the blogs catalog database name mm-hmm. as the catalog database.
Right.
And then the connection string that you see in the third parameter is just credentials.
Right.
So no server name, no database yeah. name in there. So let's keep running through this. And let's skip over this for now. Let's go to the second part. So right now, there are no blog postings in any of the databases.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and add one. And let's pretend I'm the first tenant. And I want to add Torsten1 as a new blog title.
Mm-hmm.
So now, since we have all of the input parameters gathered, now let's go into an entity framework context to actually write those entries mm-hmm. into the right database. So how do I find the right database? So I want to open a context that goes into the database for tenant one. That's mm-hmm. The number that we just entered. So and the way that we do this is by going into a context that takes the information about my data tier, that's what we just populated through the catalog,
mm-hmm.
the tenant ID, which I just put into the console mm-hmm. window, which is one, and then credentials to connect to that tenant's database. So let's step into that. And here is step through that. Here is the place where I'm retrieving the shard map from the data tier abstraction, and that has all the mappings for the different tenants to the different databases. And I can ask this shard map to broker me a connection into the right database for this tenant key number one. So let's step over that. And here we have an existing connection. I'm storing that away. I'm going through some code to trigger Entity Framework migrations, mm-hmm. if necessary, to bring the schema to the latest state.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are returning that connection back into our main program. And now we have a fully functional Entity Framework database context. So we can populate a blog variable, add that blog variable to the blogs, and then save the changes. So great. Let's keep running here. So that basically took care of adding one new blog entry mm-hmm. for a given tenant into the mix. So and that was the first challenge that we just talked about. The second challenge was, now I want to see what are all the blog entries from all of my tenants. How mm-hmm. do I do that? And that's the breakpoint that we're at right now, which does not take information about a specific tenant ID into the constructor for the context. Instead, what I'm doing here is I'm just using a regular entity framework database context with mm-hmm. a connection string that is populated from the app.config, and it connects me to the catalog. And inside the catalog, I'm using a capability that's pretty new, that's currently in preview in Azure mm-hmm. SQL DB, which is called Elastic Query, which allows me to query essentially a logical view over a table that is partitioned across a number of databases. And that's exactly the case here mm-hmm. as well.
And is that that logical view isn't something you have to go in and create, it's done for you?
No, it's actually something that you have to create. And when we look at the DDL that creates it in just a minute. So it's a one-time operation. Mm-hmm. And essentially what you want to do is make sure that whatever blocks table you have on the individual databases, mm-hmm. the schema of those guys matches the schema that you are putting into that logical view that stretches across all of those guys.
Okay. So one other question for you before we move on. So in this situation, you know, you were entering the tenant ID and that was specifically mapped to the database.
Yep.
How would that be different if you were using something more logical, like let's say maybe the URL of the application or something like that? Like, can you have that sort of mapping in your database, like use that? Or
yeah, that is a great question. So something that I've done in the past to do that is basically give out different DNS names through Traffic Manager.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you are, let's say you are in an Azure cloud service and your HTTP mm-hmm. request comes in, you can look into the HTTP context and see what DNS name is being used.
Right.
And if you're careful and disciplined about how you provide these DNS names, you can mm-hmm. encode, for instance, the name of your tenant into the DNS name.
Okay.
And then you can use that the tenant's name, if you parse that from the mm-hmm. HTTP request from mm-hmm. the URL, you can use that to drive the same connection brokering mechanism that we just looked at.
OK, great.
Okay. One more question from me. When you create a new block from the tenant one mm-hmm. in this example, the master DB in the pool decide which database to write this tenant one. Is this randomly defined, distributing, balancing all the database with the new coming tenants, or you define which tenant to be in which database?
So in this specific case, I'm defining that. So as part of scaling out my data tier, mm-hmm. And I have a little PowerShell script that's part of the solution that uses PowerShell to create a new database in Azure SQL DB. Then it registers it for the data tier in the catalog. Mm-hmm. And as part of doing that registration, you provide the connection string to mm-hmm. that newly created database. Mm-hmm. And you also provide the tenant name or the tenant ID. And that then establishes the mapping, logical mapping between the tenant name mm-hmm. and the underlying connection string to the database.
So is that something that's also exposed programmatically or through an API? So if you wanted to build your own interface for spinning up database and just adding that all, you could do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, at this point, it's part of this library mm-hmm. that we just looked at. And there's a set of APIs mm-hmm. that allows you to create a new data tier, to add databases into your data tier, and then to register these mappings from tenants to specific databases.
Oh, great.
So all of that can be programmatically driven. And that's probably what you want. So if you have a cloud scale application, you mm-hmm. have some sort of an experience where new tenants can sign mm-hmm. up, and then you want to drive the whole process mm-hmm. behind the scenes automatically.
Okay. Great.
So here, now this is the second case where we want to retrieve all the blocks from all of the databases. And I'm connecting to the catalog that uses the Elastic database capability mm-hmm. that provides me that unified logical view across all mm-hmm. of my databases. And I can use that then to, again, create an entity framework database context, run a query over it, and you should see it here. Here is Torsten1 that we just entered. Let's do a different tenant, go to a different database. And let's say maybe Chris10 goes here. And again, run the global query. And you can see Chris10 and Torsten1, they're all there.
Right. Now, one other question. You mentioned earlier that at one point before it, I think, actually touched the database, or before it did the query, it ran the migrations for Entity First, yeah. or Entity Framework. So is the way that works is basically if you do make a change to the schema, the next time it touches each database, it's going to handle updating that for you? So it does that for you?
It does that for you. There are a few gotchas with that that you need to keep in mind. So essentially, if you're following what you saw in the code, you're lazily updating your schema.
Right.
So every time basically a tenant logs into his or her database, then you would check whether there are any pending migrations, and the migrations would be rolled out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a tenant is idle for long periods of time, then they may actually miss a couple of migrations, and some of the schema changes that are applied to other databases mm-hmm. might be missing for that particular
right.
tenant. So that's something to be mindful of. If you're also using this global query capability,
right.
that has certain assumptions mm-hmm. about a common schema across all of your databases. So if you're not careful, you may mm-hmm. break that assumption because a particular column that you're querying might not yet have been rolled out mm-hmm. to the tenant that has not had its migrations yet.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind. There are alternatives that you can follow. Mm-hmm. So for instance, you can use update database and script out the migrations into
right.
a T-SQL script, mm-hmm. and then use a capability like Elastic Database Jobs to roll out that T-SQL script across all of the databases
right.
in your pool.
Which if you're building something of this scale, it's probably a good chance you're doing in a more
yes.
architecturally sound way, such
yes.
as doing this.
Yeah, that's what I would recommend. Then
yeah.
you know exactly what state are your databases
right.
in from a schema perspective.
Right. Great.
So so let me just illustrate this capability that we just talked about for querying across database sets. As I mentioned, it's called Elastic Database Query. Initially, we thought about it from a reporting perspective. So if somebody is using something like Excel mm-hmm. and needs a common point to connect to from a SQL perspective, and then get all of the data from my scaled-out data tier in one place. So that's something that we enable through Elastic Query by providing you this Elastic Query database where you define the logical view. And then Excel or even SQL Server Management Studio can connect to that database.
Mm-hmm.
They'll find the logical views, just like regular tables, in the catalog. And as you formulate your queries over these logical views, behind the scenes, it will spin up the distributed query that assembles all the data from your scaled-out data tier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, as you just saw, you can also use that in your application.
Mm-hmm.
And like you just saw it, have an entity framework context, database context, point to that Elastic Query database. And then run entity framework queries over over that logical view.
Yeah, you can run insert, delete everything even on this Elastic Query database also.
That is a great question.
Yeah.
So right now we are only supporting reads against the remote tables. You can do whatever you want locally on the Elastic Query database itself, mm-hmm. but as soon as you're doing something against the remote tables, mm-hmm. It's reads only at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that a lot of folks would like to do update, insert, delete,
yeah.
so we're working on supporting DML against the remote tables as well.
A quick question before you go on. So in the news, the last thing I mentioned, or one of the last things, was talking about the always encryption, the always-on encryption stuff for SQL database. Is that something that can be applied here so you can tell each tenant, like, hey, your database is encrypted differently from other tenants?
I would need to try that, but they shouldn't. I don't expect any problems
okay.
With that. But it's a great question that
great.
I should look into.
Okay.
We have you have played a lot with row-level security, and in particular in cases where multiple tenants share the same database, mm-hmm. then applying row-level security to separate the tenants from each other. So that I know works quite well. Right. What I do want to show you is, I mentioned that there is a little one-time setup that you have to do to provide these logical views with Elastic Query. So I want to step you through the DDL for that. Okay. So what you're seeing here is, first you define an external data source of type sharded or horizontally partitioned data tier, and it points to the catalog database that has all the mm-hmm. information about my data tier. You need a credential to connect to that, and then there's some naming to name your data tier. So this is essentially the name of my data tier. Once I've provided that information, and I run this statement in the Elastic Query mm-hmm. database that I connect to, then that database essentially knows about my scaled out data tier and the database that participate in it. The next step that I then do is create an external table with exactly the same schema that I'm also using for the tables that mm-hmm. are storing the actual data mm-hmm. on the databases. And I'm telling that schema to use that external data source that we just defined. So I'm essentially saying, hey, this table is a logical U over physical tables that are stored on all of these databases. And then I have various options around what data distribution is applied. Is mm-hmm. it horizontally partitioned? Is it replicated? Or is it some random distribution? So let's see. Where those guys are there. OK, so here you see this is my external data source, and here is my my external table blogs. And then since we are in T-SQL, I can also just issue regular T-SQL against mm-hmm. That logical table. And you see these two rows that we just entered in the demo app come back here. Let's run an aggregation query. Obviously, we have two rows in here. Let's take a look at the query plan. And what you can see here is this remote query operation essentially embeds the distributed query processing. So if you look into the bottom part there, you can see the remote query T-SQL that's actually being shipped to mm-hmm. The remote databases. And here we are doing a count to count the number of blog entries or rows on each of the participating databases. And then the stream aggregate here does the overall count, the global aggregation on top of it.
Now, is it possible to treat these views as kind of traditional SQL database views where you can do, you know, row name changes and do joins and things like that?
So these guys, I could join with other remote tables or other external tables. I can also join with local tables that sit on the database that I'm mm-hmm. currently connected to. I can also run a select into statement where I'm gathering a bunch of data from remote databases and then are basically persisting that in a local table. Mm-hmm. So all of that works. We try to be quite smart about which operations we can push down to the remote databases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just this week, we're rolling out a bunch of changes for that. So previously, we didn't support parameterized queries. None of the parameterization mm-hmm. could be pushed to the remote databases. That's something that we have fixed. Also, in addition to the horizontally partitioned sharded data tiers here, we are introducing a new, simpler type of external data sources that we call RDBMS that allows you to connect to a single remote database. That's something that customers have asked for a lot. But that's worth a whole session on its own.
Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, right now it's read-only, but you're looking into providing other options. Does that mean that there's no capability for example, executing a stored procedure against all of the databases?
Great question. We actually have a stored procedure in the Elastic Query feature set, and the stored procedure is called SPExecute fanout, and it has a signature that's similar to SPExecute SQL. And you would use that to invoke functions or stored procedures on remote databases. Okay. So it basically takes the information about your data tier, like the catalog database mm-hmm. information, and then it takes a piece of T-SQL where it can basically run a stored procedure invocation. And that is then sent to the remote databases that you have in your data tier.
OK, great.
So this is how you basically bootstrap your mm-hmm. Elastic query experience. And then you can query it either through T-SQL or as you saw from the application.
Now that you were just back in the references, is that just a NuGet package? You just add your application?
Yeah, that's what why I was going back into the browser. Perfect. Let's go to NuGet.org. Here we are. And if you type something like Elastic Scale, this is the NuGet package that I was using there. And you can just install it like any other NuGet package.
Excellent.
Good. Something for the sake of completeness. So we spent a lot of time talking about entity framework, EF, and how to basically hijack the constructors for database context to make them work and absorb the capabilities of the library. Something that I was curious about is whether this also works for other ORMs like Dapper. So if we have time, we can spend 2-3 minutes on just going through a Dapper experience.
I think we've got two or 3 minutes.
Awesome. So let's close this guy down. Let's close this guy down. So here is a very similar program in Dapper. And you can see I'm using Dapper proper here from the references and Dapper extensions.
Can you really quick talk through what Dapper is?
Yeah. So Dapper is similar to Entity Framework, basically an object relational mapping technology that allows you to point your application to a relational database and then populate objects in your application, your C# application, from the rows that you have in your database underneath. As opposed to Entity Framework, Dapper is a little bit, let's say, more simplistic or lightweight as you want. And here, the program itself is structured very much in the same way. Here in the main routine, the first thing that I do is basically bootstrap my data tier again, like with Entity Framework. And then I'm putting together my my query that retrieves from that logical view all the blocks that exist in all of my databases. And you can see that here, I'm just using a regular SQL connection against the connection string that I built here. And then this is Dapper at work. So I provided an actual T-SQL statement. And it's going to populate a collection of blogs. And then I can iterate over that. Also, the second part, very much the same. Ask for a tenant ID. And then for a given tenant, you can enter a title for a blog. And then here, the code under the breakpoint is the interesting one. Again, you're seeing the use of the open connection for a key call from the library that brokers the connection into a specific database given the tenant ID. And then I'm, again, using Dapper to just insert a new blog entry on that connection. So let's run this real quick. Here we are, creating our data tier. Let's run to the next breakpoint. And obviously, we're connecting to exactly the same data tier. So the two rows that we just input, they're there. Let's go into database 1 again and add Torsten 1A, let's say. And here, this is the place we are brokering the connection for tenant 1. And then here, we're inserting the new blog. And here is Torsten 1A, the new blog.
So the takeaway here is that this also works with other sorts of ORMs, not just Entity First.
Exactly.
Great.
Good. So that was this, Elastic Data Tiers with Dapper. Now, something I just want to briefly talk about and show how you can do that as well is we've talked a lot about the actual code and how you can use the library. But when we are talking about migrations or we are touching on what do you do with the managing your application lifecycle, right? Yep. And there you're facing a question that oftentimes involves running a piece of T-SQL or some operation against some, many, or all of the databases that you have in your data tier. Just imagine that you're adding a new property to one of your classes in Entity Framework, and then you have to roll out essentially a new column to all of the tables that you have in the databases. So how would you do that? And The way that you that I mentioned already previously is to use Elastic Database Jobs, which is a foolproof, scalable way to accomplish that. That works great with Elastic Database Pools and also the data tier abstractions that we just worked with. So let me show you this. So if you were actually to process an actual migration, you would be looking at a T-SQL script similar to this. But since all the tables are created in all of my databases, let's do something that's a little bit simpler and just pretend that we're going to clean up the demo and basically delete all of the blog entries that we just made.
Sounds good.
So to do that, let's jump back into the Azure portal here. And here on the pool, the Elastic pool, I can create a new Elastic database job. And that requires me to log in. And then I have an experience where I can give my job a name, say this is my delete demo. And here is the username for my data tier. Let's just say we're going to do delete from logs, as simple as that, and then say run. So what this now does behind the scenes is it basically reflects over the Elastic database pool what are all the databases that are registered for that pool. It enumerates them and then spins up a task execution framework. And you can see these tasks being created right now, where each task connects to one of the databases that I have in the pool, takes that piece of T-SQL that I provided, so that delete statement, and issues the delete statement against the database. And you can see here, it should have completed against all of the databases, all of my blogs databases. Just to make sure, let's just run the first part of the entity framework code again. Here we are. This is the query across all databases. OK, all the blog postings are gone.
Is there any options for doing any sort of filtering in there if you maybe didn't want to affect all databases? Or is it pretty much in that situation, it's everything?
So what you saw in the portal is a very streamlined experience for pools. Yep. We also provide an experience through PowerShell where you have a lot more flexibility around the groups of databases you want to run your T-SQL over. So you can even define your own custom groups where you stitch together a set of databases from different logical servers, even across different data centers and different regions.
Okay, very cool.
And what's great about the framework itself, so as these tasks are executed against the individual databases, obviously you can see the progress of your whole job, but the tasks also will retry. So if there are some failures along the way, it has built-in retry policies. So essentially, it's we are trying to provide a fire and forget experience.
Very nice. Yeah.
Great. Cool. With that, that's pretty much all that I had put together for today.
Well, it looks like we also have some links for more information, which we'll make sure we include underneath the show notes.
Yep.
Is there anywhere somebody should go if they have questions, if they want to reach out for more information?
Shoot me an email. I'm very curious all the time to see what people are doing, what issues they're hitting, and how I can help them.
Perfect.
So feel free to reach out to me.
Okay, great. And then usually, do you have a Twitter handle? Some people like to reach out through that? Or does
the
team?
I don't have a Twitter handle. I mean, you can try the all-up SQL Twitter handle, but that will get a lot of attention.
Yes, for sure. Excellent. Well, thanks so much for showing us this. You know, I'm used to building slings at a smaller scale, so it's really cool to understand how you can build things at, you know, what appears to be quite a massive scale.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks very much.
And thanks everybody out there for watching us. Make sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time.